All right, everybody, this is Dexter Pitts, and this is the Iron Pitts Podcast. And with me today, I have my first two guests on the Iron Pitts Podcast, and I'm proud to have them. With me, I have Brett Coyer and Zach Creever. I hope I did not butcher your names. If I did, please forgive me. And they are here with us from the Roy Williams Foundation. How y'all doing today, gentlemen?
Just fine, Dexter. How are you?
Good, good, man. I'm glad to have y'all on board, man. And like I said, before we get started with any good interview, it's always good to get a little icebreaker in. So I got a couple questions I'm going to ask y'all, fellas, so we can get to know you a little more. And depending on how you answer one of these questions, I might just end this interview. So, all right. So, Brett, the first question is going to go to you. Then, Zach, you can answer after him.
All right.
Worst job you've ever had?
Worst job I ever had was in Pueblo, Colorado. I was probably 17 years old. It was the middle of summertime, late summer, and I worked for a construction company, and there was a house that burned pretty severely on the inside, and my job was to go up into the attic and remove all of the old fiberglass insulation and put it in bags and throw it down out of the crawl space so they could rebuild the house. And of course, I was sweating really bad, and you know, by the time it was over, I had that fiberglass insulation all over me, and I just wanted to peel my skin off.
Oh, God, that sounds awful. That is pretty bad.
That's when it dawned on me that I needed to buy some tool bags and tell the other guys that I worked with that I was ready to start learning some trades. I was tired of being a laborer. So
there you
go. They took good care of me after that.
There you go. Zach?
I'll go back before I was even in the military. When I was a young buck, being a busboy, picking up after people's shit at their tables, seeing how dirty individuals are and just don't care for, you know, other people's space. You know, they decide that someone else is going to pick up after them, and they're just Neanderthals.
Oh, I agree. But you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is, man, I'm teaching my kids is you could tell a lot by a person by how they treat the people that serve them, like, yeah. You know, like you treat your waiters and your waitresses. And the other thing is, that absolutely drives me crazy when people do not put their carts back into the cart corral at stores at Walmart and such. What kind of low life are you? like what is wrong with you?
just went to Walmart earlier, and this dude put his cart directly behind my truck.
Oh, see? See? That's how we have problems, man. That's how problems start.
Right.
All right, next question is for Brett. What is one regret you have in your life?
You know, there's so many, it's really hard to single any one out. I would have to say about a month after I got my driver's license, 16 years old, I had saved my money for several years to buy a 1966 Ford pickup. It had been in a garage for 30 years. It was beautiful. Everything was custom. And I got drunk one night and hanging with some girls I probably shouldn't have been. And I ended up driving it off a 60-foot cliff.
Oh,
yes, sir.
What?
Luckily for me, I was the only one in the truck when I drove it off. If I wasn't so drunk or was in a different make of a truck, it probably would have rolled and I would have been killed. So that old truck saved my life. Unfortunately, that was the end of that truck, and I would give anything to go back to that moment, slap my drunk young self and say, don't ever do that again. It cost me quite a bit.
Tell you what, boy, they sure don't make them like they used to. You would have did that in the 2019, brother. That would have been curtains.
That's right. Just build them out of fiberglass and
that's right.
These days, so
probably that same fiberglass you were moving out of the attic.
Yeah, maybe so, for sure.
Zach?
Oh, regrets. Oh, let's see. I'd say at maybe this point in my life, I mean, I have serious regrets, but I'd say more of some subtle decisions that I've made. I just haven't really taken time out of my life to travel and go do things and, you know, visit individuals that have been a big part in my life. I guess I wouldn't have taken the time to reach out to individuals that I used to have relationships with, like brothers and sisters, you know, like good friends that I haven't maintained relationships with, that I wish I would have traveled and gone around the United States, and people who have, you know, live in Germany and overseas now, and just taking the time to maintain those relationships with them. I've kind of kept to myself over the years, and it's, I feel like it just continued to get worse. And so, but hey.
Hey, I'm right there with you, man. You know, that's one of my biggest things right now as well. I wish I had the time, the money to do so.
Yeah.
Hopefully in the near future, man. You know, you get that together, and same here for me, man. That's why I'm glad to be part of this foundation and the Elk Hunt we got coming up here in, what, October? Looking forward to that. I told my wife, come hell or high water, me and my son, we're going, so we'll be there. So,
absolutely.
Looking forward to seeing you come out. We got a place for you guys to stay, and got a pretty good tour guide for you.
So. Oh, I'm all about it. I cannot wait. All right. Next question is, Brett, what is your thermostat set at? Get that out.
We keep them about 62 degrees around here. We're on propane, which is very expensive, but we also have a wood-burning stove. So basically our thermostat just keeps my wife's cats comfortable till we get home to build a fire.
That is absolutely beautiful, because I'm dying in this closet. My wife does not care about me. She's trying to dehydrate me slowly and kill me. Zach?
Well, I got a roommate that's from Texas, so I got to have a little happy medium here. I keep it on 70, and he tries to crank it up 72, 73, 74, and I'm just like that grumpy old man who guards the thermostat and gets pissed off if he changes it. So I keep it at a decent 70 degrees just to have that happy medium.
Oh, man, I wish there was a happy medium, dude. Like, what I did, man, so my wife, she's constantly cold. I'm always hot. Man, I got this mink blanket from Iraq back in 2005. After my mom died, I got it from the house. And now she keeps this thing with her all the time, man. And this thing is so freaking hot. And it's like, it's not enough. And I come home from work in the morning after working 12 hours all night. Thermostat set at 74, and she's wrapped up in this mink blanket. I'm like, yo, what is wrong with you? There's something. I'm like, let me get you some more iron or something, man.
Having a heat stroke.
Oh, God, dude. I mean, I know I'm a big boy, man, and I need to sweat and lose some weight. But dear God, this is not the way. You know, ever since I came back from Iraq, I told myself I'm going to enjoy the creature comforts of living in America. If I had my way, I'd have my thermostat set at 65. And she always uses the children against me. She's like, Dexter, your children are cold. And me, I'm like, hey, man, the heck with them kids, man. You better get a hoodie or a blanket or something, because
tell them to put some clothes on.
All right, gentlemen, last question. Like I say, depending on how you answer this one, this interview might end early. First thought that comes to mind when you think of people who sleep with their socks on?
Oh, sweaty feet. Can't stand it. Couldn't do it if I had to. If somebody were to pay me to sleep with socks on, I'd have to tell them to keep their money. Can't do it.
Zach?
I actually sleep with my socks on. Nah, I'm just playing.
Oh, I'm about to say, I'm about to cut this interview.
I'd say that's downright ridiculous. I can't do the socks thing. I sleep with a very thin quilt. Adding socks to it, I'd be sweating. So,
as I say, people that sleep with their socks on, they are sociopaths, psychopaths, and I'm married to one. They're Cab Scouts, right, Zach?
No, buddy.
Or officers in the military.
Yeah.
All right, man. I thank y'all for going along with that one, man. So I appreciate y'all for taking the time out of your day to come here today. But like I say, we're going to get down to business. We are here to talk about the Roy Williams Foundation. And this is a foundation that you two started together, correct?
That is correct. Kravir knew Roy far better than I did. And as I was stating, I just knew Roy for a very small amount of time, but he definitely made an impact on me.
So. Awesome. Zach, one of y'all want to tell us about the Roy Williams Foundation and what it is that you all are doing, your vision, and what you all hope to accomplish with that foundation?
Yeah. The Roy Williams Foundation was established we're trying to, I mean, I know there's tons of nonprofit organizations out there that support veterans and do this and that. And, you know, you got some big name ones like Wounded Warrior Project, or a new one that just came out that some individuals from the Black Rifle Coffee Company, the Veteran, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Rocco Vargas, they just started that. And we're just trying to bridge that gap and continue to help veterans, and for individuals that may need extra help if the VA is not supporting them, getting them counseling, or it could be, you know, help with getting prosthetics, or maybe they need a new wheelchair, or so on and so forth. We want to bring people together and do retreats, and, you know, some just individuals that can relate to each other and they have those things to talk about, instead of, you know, just sitting down and talking to someone who doesn't know them, or going to see a counselor and they just can't relate to this individual. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bridge that gap and bring people together so we can all support each other.
That's awesome, man. And that's why, you know, I'm glad that Kit Steinle reached out to me to be on the board. And I was absolutely honored to have my name thrown in there and to be a part of this organization, because, like I say, I know personally what it's like to be in that position, from being a Purple Heart veteran, being wounded in Iraq, and still currently suffering from PTSD myself, you know. And like I said, I'm currently going back in counseling and therapy at the VA. You know, working third shift has really put a strain on me, and I've been good for years. And, you know, those little fibers start coming apart. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have those people in your corner, you know, you don't have that good schedule, whatever, it starts to fall apart. But that's where we have something like the Roy Williams Foundation that steps in to try to help keep us together, because that sense of community that we all have in the military, once you get out, you don't realize how important it is. And once it's gone, man, you just start to fall apart. You know, and I was before I started doing the interview, I was looking at statistics, and the global war on terror has been going on for 19 years. Now, who would ever thought we'd still be in this fighting this whole thing? And of course, it's not as hot as it was years ago, but it's still going on. And then we have lost 7,056 American lives have been lost in the war on terror, man. That's a lot. But the most scary part is this. We all know the statistic of 22 veterans a day kill themselves. So 22 veterans a day. In 1 year, that's 8,030 veterans that lost their lives to suicide. That's 152,570 veterans that have killed themselves since the war on terror started. That's 19 years worth of losses, and that's unacceptable, you know. And that's why I'm glad we have organizations like you all as well. And the Roy Williams Foundation, correct, also deals with first responders, correct?
Absolutely.
And I looked up these stats earlier. So in 2020, there were 358 officers that died in the line of duty. Now, 230 of those were from COVID-related deaths. Now, one of my buddies I went to the academy with, Martez Hughes, he died just past January because of COVID-related incidents. But other than that, it was 128 on-duty deaths in 2020. That was, you know, shootings, car accidents, and such. But also in 2020, we had 140 officers that took their own lives. 140 that died in the line of duty. You know, and like I said, we personally in Louisville, We had a sergeant back in 2015, Sergeant John Pugh, and it was our first day of having 12-hour shifts on the PD. And I remember the call come on the radio that there was an officer shot at the division, and we didn't know what happened. And it turned out that the sergeant shot and killed himself in his office, man. And that just it just broke everybody. And the sad part was he was one of the happiest guys, always laughing, always joking. None of us saw it coming. Like I said, we've all been touched by suicide in a way. I lost my mother to suicide August 29th of 2010. She shot and killed herself after a domestic incident with my father. I've been through it myself, where I remember sitting with my pistol in my lap at one point in time thinking, this ain't worth going through no more. The thing that kept me from going over the edge was I had a sergeant that was a Marine, and he saw I was going through something. He knew something wasn't right with me, and he pulled me aside, and he chewed me out, and we got down to the bottom of it, man. And that's why I'm glad we have you all going, you know, starting this foundation and trying to reach out and help a community of tough guys that need it more than anybody. Because we, the tough guys, we're the ones that always try to keep up that facade and that persona of being tough. We don't need help, when the truth is we need it more than anybody else.
Yep.
Zach, you served with Roy, correct?
I did. 2011 is when I met Roy in Mosul. And that's basically where our relationship started. I mean, we had few interactions here and there, and then it just we got to going on missions together and getting to know each other. And there was this one day where he saw I had this diesel magazine, and he's like, "All right, I hate you a little less now. We can be friends." So after that, I mean, Roy and I were pretty much inseparable. I mean, doing missions together, redeploying back to the States, and then we ended up getting transfer. Well, so we did an interpost transfer over to our first brigade and trained up to go back to Afghanistan in 2012. So after that, we served in Afghanistan together for another 9 months. And I mean, we were best friends. We've been best friends ever since. And it was just one of those unbreakable bonds, one of those friendships that you can never, you know, never match with another individual. It's just, it's like you have that one person in your life that's extremely close to you, and once they're gone, it's like they can't be replaced.
And
So,
completely understand, brother. What was y'all's y'all were both Cav Scouts, correct?
yes, both 19 Delta Cav Scouts.
19 Delta. And did y'all when y'all were overseas, did y'all experience any traumas together, IED wise or combat wise or firefights?
We had couple ticks here and there. I think Roy had some encounters with some IEDs. We had couple suicide bombers. Where were we? I think we were out in not Western Maiwan, but out in Western Maiwan, out in by Azafab, Azazula is where we got in most of our altercations. But other than that, it wasn't too terrible of a deployment, you know.
Awesome, man. Glad to hear that, brother. Man, and Brett, and you, and how did you meet Roy?
I met Roy through Kit Steinle. Kit was renting the house from my wife and I out here on the ranch, and Kit decided to move out. And I told him, you know, you're friends with a bunch of veterans and a bunch of first responders, bring one of them into this house. We love renting to our heroes, you know. And that's when he brought Roy out here to meet us, and me and Roy clicked right away, and we hit it off. And it was sometime later, probably 3 or 4 months later, that Roy moved into the house, and we became pretty quick friends. You know, he's a heck of a nice guy, really good sense of humor, had a lot to talk about, and we sure enjoyed him the time that he was out here.
And Zach, so how did Roy become get to Colorado and become involved in law enforcement? Do you know the story behind that?
Oh yeah. So once it was, I think we were redeploying back from Afghanistan, and Roy was coming to the end of his contract, and he's ended up, I can't remember. He ended up getting in, you know, Roy chasing tail as usual. He's talking to this girl up in Gunnison, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go up there and visit the school." And you know, I can't remember what school's up there in Gunnison, right in Gunnison, Brett.
Wasted State,
Okay.
Western State College.
That's it.
Yep.
So Roy went and he's like, "I'm gonna go back to school." And he was trying to go for, you know, be a river guide and do, you know, hippie stuff. He went up there and checked out the school and got into it with this girl and was trying to start a relationship, and he came back. He's like, "Yeah, I think I'm gonna go there." So Roy ended up packing his stuff and went up to Gunnison for a few years. And you know, I after he moved up there, not but a few weeks later, I was right behind him coming to visit, and Roy was not in the house. We were camping out in the woods in middle of Gunnison because he didn't have a house yet. So we're just camping, and he's got all this shit with him. He ended up going to school for a little while, and then he just lost interest in it and got into doing a bunch of jobs here and there. He was bouncing at a bar and restocking shelves at a grocery store with bread, and he was working at a gas station doing all sorts of stuff. And he's like, "You know, I'm done with this bullshit. I'm gonna go to go be a cop. I'm checking out. He was checking out a couple different, he was checking out Chaffee County, which he worked for, as well as Salida PD. And he was checking out a couple departments. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go to go to school and try to find one of these departments to work for. So once he graduated, I was going to try to make it up there for his graduation and ended up mailing him his first set of handcuffs for his little graduation present.
After that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. He just, you know, he decided that, you know, doing these little odd jobs here and there wasn't for him, and he wanted to do something that he could relate to, you know, military wise. So he's like, he always used to tell me, he's like, you need to come up here and be a cop. He's like, it's a lot like the military. It's like a third of the stress and two times the fun. So
as a police officer and former 11 Bravo in the Army, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. However, with the way things been going with protesting in Louisville and around the country, and that stress is about on par with being in a combat zone, man. Yeah. All right. And now with Roy, how everything transpired in his life, which one of y'all can tell us about to where he made that unfortunate decision in his life, how that happened?
So I was up there, honestly, literally the week before this all happened, like Roy took his life. We were, you know, I was just coming into town, finally coming to get to visit with, it was probably, I don't know, maybe a year or two since we've, nah, not two, maybe a little over a year since we've seen each other, which we usually make it, you know, we go out of our way to visit each other. I just PCS down here to Fort Benning, and I was up there at Fort Riley up in Kansas, which is 6 hours from Carson. So I think Salida or Poncha's another 2 hours from there. So not too terrible of a drive. So he made it down there with his dogs, and we had a good time. And after I PCS down here to Fort Benning, I made my way up to Salida and wanted to go do some ride-alongs with him and have a good time. And we decided to go hunting up in Gunnison. And after our trip, I noticed there was something going on with him and his girlfriend. I mean, before all that transpired, I mean, Roy was, you know, always the one just to, you know, live here and there, like get an apartment, you know, rent a place, do this and that. And he was really, you know, taking strides to build a life for himself and his girlfriend. So him and his girlfriend decided to get this place. They're building a new place right on the edge of Poncha Springs, I think it was, Brett, right?
That is correct. Yeah, about a mile from here where we live on the ranch.
Yep.
It was a beautiful, nice new home. I actually know the people who moved into it, and they know the story behind how the home became available, and they just love it. It turned out really, really nice. And if he didn't have that one bad occasion, I think they would have been real happy there.
Yeah. And after Roy, I mean, he was determined to, he loved his job. He was excelling at being a deputy, and he just loved doing what he did. And he was excited about, you know, starting a life with this girl that he was in a relationship with. And evidently she had other plans. She didn't want to be in the relationship anymore. And I guess she just wasn't being very clear about it. And I think that the life that he was building and working so hard for came to an abrupt stop, that it kind of just broke him. Mentally, he wasn't in a good spot. And weeks before, he had just taken a visit to the VA as well. And I think that they ended up putting him on some antidepressant medication, which I'm sure that scrambled his brain as well. Trying to adjust to that as well as, you know, going through some serious life stressors at the time is what really broke him. So, and then I literally had left, maybe not, but I don't know, 24 hours, he was giving me a call, which was pretty uncommon since, you know, it's since I had literally just left his house and he's calling me. He's like, I could tell there was something wrong in his voice. And that's when he laid the beans out and just said that Haley hadn't been home yet and she was supposed to be home yesterday when I left. That I, she was ended up taking a detour to go meet up with somebody else, and it just went downhill after that. It wasn't but five days later that his buddy was calling me saying Roy had taken his life. So it all really transpired fairly quickly, and we just nobody saw it coming. Roy was always a super resilient, passive aggressive individual, extremely positive, you know. Nothing really seemed to bother him much, and I never saw, like, throughout the, 10 years that I knew Roy, nothing, like, no female relationship ever fazed him like this one did. I think he was very set, he was set on wanting to marry her, wanting to marry this girl, and it just all took a turn for the worst, and I don't think he knew how to handle it.
And, you know, it's so crazy, you know, the military prepares us for war, but they don't do a good job preparing us for life after war. And it's the same with the police department. Crazy thing about police officers is we are great at solving the world's problems. Mm-hmm. If you call me to your house, I can look at your situation, pick it apart, tell you what you're doing wrong, and I can fix your life in a matter of moments. But when I step away, it's weird. We can't look at our own problems and our own lives and come to an easy solution, but it's so easy for us to do for everybody else except ourselves.
Absolutely.
Brett, were you in town that day or were you around when the incident happened?
We were. The home that Roy rented from us is about 100 yards away from where we live. So every day when we would come home or leave, we'd drive past that house. And if Roy was not at work, he was sitting on the front porch, usually sipping whiskey and calling his friends. And almost every time that I drove by, he wanted me to come over and have a little drink with him and talk a little bit. And he told me on more than one occasion, once we had a few drinks, you know, he'd get real serious and he'd say, you know, my mind is not quite right. I need help, you know, and I'm not sure what to do about it. Every time I get to go see a psychiatrist from the VA, the VA can't really deal with what I'm laying down. And so they just always prescribe me some more psychotropic drugs and refer me to another psychiatrist with another 30-day waiting period. And I made it very clear to him that, you know, I never served in the military. I was a little bit older when 9/11 happened, married with young children, and wasn't exactly what the military was looking for. But I've always done my best to support veterans and first responders. So I told him, you know, I might not be able to relate what you went through, but I'm always here for you. You can call me anytime. I'm 100 yards away. Just let me know. And I knew that there was some friction there between Roy and his girlfriend, but I tried to stay out of it. The night that it happened, it was Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. 9:53 p.m., my wife and I were getting ready for bed, and I heard a gunshot, and just that sixth sense went through me, you know, something bad just happened. We live out in the country. There's shooting going on all the time, you know, people shooting at varmints or whatever, but I just knew something had gone wrong. So less than 3 minutes later, we made it up there, and Roy was in the front yard, and the first responders were just coming down the driveway, and there wasn't anything we could do for Roy. He was gone. But that's when it dawned on me that he had a lot more problems than we were aware of. And that is when I resolved, okay, I'm going to, you know, dedicate a certain portion of my life and free time to start helping wherever I can. One of the first things we did was, within a couple of days, we planted a maple tree right where Roy fell in the front yard. in tribute to him, you know, where he grew up, there was maple trees all over the place. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, has helped the whole situation. There's a beautiful tree. It'll be there long after we're gone to remember Roy by.
Man, I feel that one, man. Like, trying to hold back tears over here. Whew. Man, and now how did you two, Brett and Zach, how did y'all get together to start this foundation together?
Initially, when I first met Brett was actually when I came up to go hunting with Roy. And that's when he's like, oh, yeah, that's my neighbor, Brett. Yeah, wave him down. He'll come have a drink with us. That was that the one night where I was passed out on the couch. Roy and I were all pissy drunk, and Brett comes in. I was like, oh, let me pour you a glass. I pour you like a full glass of whiskey, and you're just like, oh, great.
Yeah, well, I believe I finished the whole thing while you were sleeping on the couch, you know. And, luckily, it's all downhill from there to where I live. Only 100 yards, I made it home safely that night.
Tuck and roll, you make it there eventually.
That's
the
right.
The question is, what was in the glass? What kind of whiskey are we talking about here, gentlemen?
Oh, JMO.
Oh, man.
He really likes Seagram 7, too, which back when I personally had a pretty big drinking problem, and that was my favorite drink, so it was always hard to tell him, no, I can't drink with you that tonight. You know, I got to get home. Mm-hmm. I'd always stay and have some with him.
Is that good of a guy, man?
Absolutely.
Good of a guy.
Man, yeah. I got a pretty funny story about him that kind of sums Roy up, and Zach might agree. I'm sure he has 100 stories, but we needed help. You know, we're in the livestock industry. We have cows and bulls and horses, and we had this one old cow that was having a problem with her hoof, and we had to run her into the chute to work on her hoof. And you know, they're big dangerous animals, especially if they don't like what you're trying to do for them. So we were a person short, so I asked him. I said, hey Roy, can you come help us doctor this cow's foot for us? And he said, you bet. And I said, all right, just hop in with me when you're ready. Well, I thought he'd go put work boots on or something. Nope, he was ready to go right then, and he hopped in my truck with his flip-flops on and his shorts, and it was quite a rodeo. I thought I saw fear in his eyes once when she turned like she was going to take him, but he was kind of a big old boy, and she decided not to try, and she ended up in the chute, and we got the cow doctored. But just a moment, I thought he was going to get steamrolled. One thing about him, though, is he was fearless. Personally, that is one of the more troubling aspects for me is, you know, you're a bunch of tough men and women, and almost nothing phases you, you know, on the outside. So in my mind, just a little heartache or whatever, Roy should have been strong enough to deal with that. But that in conjunction with all the other stuff he had going on upstairs was just more than he could bear, you know? And so that's what we want to figure out, how to solve this problem. How do we make sure everybody is getting the help that they need, whatever that might be, you know? That's what we got to figure out. You know, what does each individual need, and how can we personally tailor their treatment program to help them through whatever is bothering them? Need to be as mentally resilient as you are physically. And that's different for everybody. So we're real happy to have you on board, Dexter. You're going to go a long way to helping us with our mission.
Speaking from firsthand experience, I had a real bad breakdown when I was in Arizona last year, early 2020. Man, I just completely shut down. Like, I didn't talk to my wife, my kids for almost 3 to 4 weeks. I just couldn't. Like, I was living in this brain fog. I just couldn't get out of it. Like, I moved out into the garage, and I just wanted nothing to do with anything in my life. I would go to work, and I'd just come home and sit in the garage. I was just start doing irrational things. I remember I went to Walmart for no reason. I just bought this giant big screen TV. And I remember my wife walking into the garage like, really? And I didn't say nothing. I just sat there, you know, and I realized I needed help. I say, I love my country, but the government is another story. I remember I drove myself to the VA in Tucson, and I told them, I need help. I am not well. And they told me, there's nobody here that can help you right now. And they turned me away. They gave me a pamphlet and some trazodone. call this number in the morning. And, you know, I'd heard the horror stories of the VA for many years. Probably wouldn't happen to me. That's that guy. When it happened to me, I was like, this is a problem. This is a major problem. Like I say, I'm going through issues now with PTSD. I'm having nightmares again. You know, my stress levels, I'm gaining weight all from working third shift. And I went to the VA the other day to meet with my mental health doctor. And he tells me, first thing they say, hey, want some of these pills? I'm like, look, dude, I do not want any pills. I have not taken pills in years. What I need is not pills. And they just love to throw medication at us and adamantly against pills. I said, in certain situations, they might work, yes, but I don't think the average person needs those. What we need is structure and support. And I don't have the structure right now in my life. I have the support with my wife, with people I work with, and with you guys. I'm trying to get that schedule back in check. And that's so hard right now with everything going on, working overtime. And the biggest thing is I realize I have to take care of myself and I have to surround myself with people that want the best for me. And that is what we need as veterans and first responders. And even if you're not a veteran or first responder, everybody needs those things. We need somebody to listen to us. We need somebody to talk to. When you don't have those things, you know, you start turning to drugs, you know, pills, alcohol, all this stuff, and it doesn't help you. And it just constantly makes the problems worse. You know, it disguises the issues we're going through and just takes the edge off a little bit. But once we're sober again, you know, we got to deal with it. And that is why I'm really glad to be a part of y'all's organization. Cause like I said, I've had friends that have killed themselves that I've served with. I lost my mother to suicide. I've been through it. And just hearing the story of Roy just really touches me because I can identify with that. Now, I'm on my third marriage, man. Been divorced twice by age 26. To the civilian world, that's abnormal. But to military, it's just like, oh, are you absolutely normal, man? That's, you know, it's no big deal. Because of my ex-wife, you know, I went through that, man. That was rough. So I know what Roy was going through. And that's what breaks my heart because I know that feeling of just being in that pit and just struggling and feeling like nobody can help you, man, guys. So I'm gonna go ahead and get ready to end this interview. But before we do, is there anything you all like to say individually about Roy and about the organization that you want people to know?
Well, I'll add that, you know, once Roy was a very much beloved member of our community. He hadn't been here very long, but he touched so many people professionally and all the first responders that he worked with. There was a really big turnout for his memorial services. A couple of hundred people, you know, very beautiful venue, and everybody took it really hard. There were a lot of tears and a lot of military people that served with him came out to visit us and see the tree that we planted in Roy's memory. And I got to know a lot of these guys pretty good in a short amount of time. And they all pretty much had the same story. They're like, the truth be told, the VA is overwhelmed. You know, it is a big bureaucracy. They're kind of doing the best that they can, even though there's members that of the VA that take it more seriously than others, you know. And that's when it dawned on me to say, you know, it's up to the civilian world, the American citizens, to step up to start helping these veterans and first responders. It can't just be the government. You know, we're a democracy, and that is where the people come in. And so then when I talked to Kabir about it and says, here's my idea, I've got it has to be run by veterans and first responders for veterans and first responders. I said, I know how to be the secretary treasurer. I've worked in government. I know how to structure meetings and prepare agendas and meeting minutes. That'll be my part of it, but it's up to you guys to drive this train. And Kravir agreed that he wanted to try to do something about it. And, you know, it all sprouted from there, and other members decided to join in. And I think we're off to a pretty good start. We didn't realize at the time that the world would kind of start falling apart right around then too, when with the COVID pandemic and now all of the civil unrest. We expected to be a little further along than we are, but we're just keeping our head down and moving forward. And I think we've come a long way already.
Awesome. Zach?
Yeah, I just, you know, with all the suicides and, you know, people that like you said, first responders and veterans and, you know, people who are still even active, they always have that macho man freaking persona. It's you know, we're supposed to be the ones that don't have the issues, you know, we're the ones that solve the issues or solve the problems. But there's always someone you can reach out to, you know. I could call any one of my buddies that I served with freaking 6-7 years ago, and we'd leave off on the same foot we left off on, you know, last conversation I had with them. You know, we can pick up and we'd still be, you know, it wouldn't be that awkward situation. I just want individuals to know that, you know, you can always reach out to someone. Someone's always going to have your back, regardless of if you left off on a bad foot or whatever it may be. If you haven't talked to them in 10 years, 15 years, whatever, reach out to someone, you know, get a hold of anybody, anyone, anybody will listen. You'd be surprised to see who is willing to listen and just, you know, lend a helping hand just in any circumstance, any situation that you may have. And I wish that, you know, Roy would have known, you know, he knew in the back of his mind that he could reach out to myself, walk over to Brett's, anybody would listen. You know, Roy was one of the nicest people I've ever met. He had tons of friends and he could have reached out to any one of us. But I just, before someone makes that terrible decision, just go ahead and don't make some rash decision that's going to change your life and the rest of your friends and your families, and just reach out before you decide to do something terrible.
Man, you know, that's very, very powerful, man. And gentlemen, I cannot thank you enough for coming here today and sharing the story of Roy and just doing what you're doing for the foundation and for veterans and first responders. Like I say, as somebody currently going through this stuff, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for your time. Thank you for what y'all are doing, because if anybody needs it, like I said, we need it. We have lost too many veterans' lives, too many first responders' lives to suicide. And this is a step in the right direction, gentlemen. But we're going to go ahead and end this one right here. Hey, Zach, thank you so much, brother. You take care of yourself, man, and I'll be in contact with y'all, all right?
Absolutely. Hey, man, you ever need anything, just fucking let one of us know, all right?
Definitely, man. Much love, y'all. Y'all take it easy.
All right, brother.
For more information on the Roy Williams Foundation, visit them at their website at roywilliamsfoundation.org. If you would like to help our nation's veterans and our brave and courageous first responders, click on the donate button to aid the Roy Williams Foundation in their mission to save the lives of those who have sacrificed for our country and their communities.